And welcome to The Breakfast Show on Faith FM with Scappy and Lindsay. This is the best place to start your day with positive and uplifting thoughts. You're listening across Australia on 87.6, 87.8 or 88 depending on where you are. Or you can listen to us through our Faith FM app anywhere in the world. Well, if you are listening live today, it is Thursday, the 27th of August. I am joined here in the studio by my two good friends, Ben and Jules. Ben, thanks for sitting across the desk from me this morning. Good to see you again.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here too. And hello, Jules, our producer for today.
Good morning, Lindsay. Good morning, Ben. Good awesome. To be here.
Morning.
Good to see you. Okay, let's start off with our gratitudes. Who wants to go first and share something that we're grateful for today?
Okay, everybody's looking at me. I'll start the ball rolling. Grateful for warmer weather.
Oh, amen.
I think a lot of people are grateful for warmer weather at the moment, just the little bit more light in the morning. I got out of the car and normally when I open the boom gate, it's wet with condensation and I just noticed, oh, it's a little bit warmer today. It just makes life a little bit easier.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, can you – I have a song request for today.
Oh, okay.
Can you play Winter by Kemi Ogendi?
Winter by Kemi Ogendi. Let me see if I can find
some of the lines go, winter didn't last, and I love it. Oh, man. So what about you, Ben? What are you grateful for today?
I'm grateful for my employment.
Your employment?
Yeah,
okay, why is
yeah.
that? Tell me more.
It brings purpose and meaning.
Okay.
Yeah. I visit people a lot, study the Bible with people. Sit in meetings, you know, planning how we can do things better for our community and for God and His work. So it's, you know, wake up every morning thinking, you know, I've got a reason for living.
So tell me, Ben, what does your typical day at work look like? Is there a typical day?
Yeah. Look, yes. My afternoons and nights are usually the majority of my work.
Yeah.
So morning times I do worship, usually preparation time for Bible studies and visiting and emails and all that sort of stuff. And then come afternoon, people, you know, kids getting home from school and families. And so that's, and then often meetings at night. I've got four meetings this week.
Oh, man, what a slug.
At night time.
When do they usually finish? Like 9 p.m. or later?
Yes, 9. I try and finish at 9.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, but oftentimes I stay back after meetings talking chit-chat about, you know, the outcome of the meeting and how to move on from there.
And you find value and meaning out of all of these different things that you get up to in your day.
Yeah.
Ah, awesome.
Yeah. Look, I think meaning comes from serving others, the bottom line.
Yeah. Absolutely. Turning outwards and serving other people, not just yourself, 100%. Well, yeah, go for it.
I was just going to say, what are you grateful for, Lindsay?
What am I grateful for? Let me tell you what I'm grateful for. I am grateful for a hot bath with Epsom salts and lavender oil and bubbles.
Oh, yes.
And a little bit of opera music in the background.
Oh, sounds delightful. Oh, when did you do that?
Last night.
Oh, nice.
Like, the sun was still up. It was like 5 p.m. Like, I'm running a bath and I'm going to bed.
But, of course, you go to bed a bit earlier than most normal people.
I do. I try to turn off the lights by 8 p.m. and try to sleep at 8 p.m. I don't get enough sleep, guys. But I managed to have a really beautiful sleep after, like, a two-hour bath last night. So praise God that I have a very tiny bathtub, but a bathtub nonetheless that I can relax in.
What a life.
Any tips for when you can't sleep because you kind of rely on getting good sleep to be able to get up early? What are your
There is wisdom wrapped in a song, and it's if you wake up in the morning and it's 12:45 and you can't go back to sleep and you want to have some fun, you brush your teeth.
Here you go, listeners. If you're having trouble sleeping, wake up and brush your teeth. You brush your teeth.
No. Actually, the real wisdom, and I actually brought something in today. So do you see what I have in my hands?
Ball.
Yeah.
Squishy.
Stress ball.
It's not squishy at all. It's quite hard. There's a tiny little bit of give in it. It's a silicone little exercise ball. It's, I don't know, like, what's that, like 4 or 5 centimeters across? And
I got this from Kmart in the exercise section. And what I use this for is I roll my feet, like the bottom of my feet, over this ball. Mm. And it releases the fascia in the bottom of your feet. And that fascia is connected to all the other parts of your body, like all the way from your big toe to your tongue, honestly. And so if you're feeling tightness in some part of your body, if you release it in the bottom of your feet, you're probably going to have a lot more relaxation. I have a lot of tips and tricks for relaxing myself. So sometimes when I can't sleep at night, my legs are restless, I get up and I'm... yeah, roll my feet on the ball in the middle of the night for a while, and then I get back to bed and I can actually relax and sleep. So there you go. Well,
I think that's placebo effect.
No, it's not. It's science. It's physiology. It is biology. And you know what? Today we're going to be talking about a whole great lineup of interesting things. We're going to be looking at Esther chapter 8 today. We're going to see what happens after Haman is out of the picture, but there's still some drama to finalize. There's still a genocide on the books, in the plans. Now let's move on. We've got a good news story. We're going to be talking about the world's best countries for education. We're going to be looking at a Himalayan flash flood with some Aussies gone missing overnight. We're also going to be talking to someone from Asian Aid and hearing about what's going on over there. We're also going to be looking at love-driven ministry, starting in 2 Corinthians chapter 1.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
Now is the best time of today's show because it is our very first quiz question. Jules, I'm so excited. Can you tell I'm excited? I love quizzes.
You love quizzes.
I love quizzes.
Yes, I can tell you're excited. Ben, are you excited about quiz
time?
No,
no.
Do you know why? I love quizzes.
Shows my ignorance.
Shows your ignorance. Sorry, I show people up a little bit. I've not been on the best streak recently, actually, when it comes to quiz time. Shell has been beating me by getting questions I had no idea the answer to.
She's throwing some curly ones at the moment, Shell.
Yeah, I reckon.
Really challenging your...
yeah,
Bible knowledge.
100%. But you know why I love quiz time?
Why?
More than the average person? Because I reckon I'm probably ADHD.
Ah.
We haven't bothered to diagnose me, but all my friends can see it. And so the thing with ADHD is these people like me have a much higher susceptibility to dopamine addiction, and you get dopamine when you do things and you succeed and you win, and I love winning, okay?
Well, let's give your brain a dopamine hit right now.
Please do.
Okay. On what island did Paul leave Titus? On what island did Paul leave Titus? Yes. 100%. Lindsay, dopamine hit.
Woo-hoo!
Boom, straight to the brain.
Straight to the brain.
If you know the answer to that, text us on 0491 064 669. 0491 064 669. If you know the answer to, yes, absolutely. Ben, dopamine hit to you too. On what island did Paul leave Titus? You can find that in Titus 1:5.
Yep. Do you know what else Paul says about the people of this island?
What does he say?
He says that their own prophets of like the local region, like not even the Christian prophets, just the people who are there, people who speak about these people. He's like, they call them lazy.
Oh, why so?
They're just lazy.
No.
And he's talking to Titus, he's saying, look, the people there, they know that they're lazy. You got to make sure that they don't be lazy in their faith.
Mm.
So interesting.
There you go.
I'm not going to say what type of people because that would give it away. Okay. All right. Let's get into Esther chapter 8. We're in our More Like Him segment for this morning. We've been going through the books of Ezra and then Nehemiah and now Esther. And we're about halfway through the book of Esther. Yesterday we looked at the story of how Esther approached the king and invited him to a couple of feasts. And in between feast 1 and 2, then Haman wanted to get rid of Mordecai even earlier than the genocide day that he had selected and had gotten approved. And so he's like, I've got a gallows. I want to hang Mordecai on these gallows. So he goes early in the morning to the palace to request of the king, can I hang Mordecai on this gallows I've got ready to go? And usually the king gives him whatever he wants. However, I believe that God had given the king no ability to sleep, even though he was drunk and well fed. He should have just crashed and had a good sleep right after that. He could not get to sleep. And so somebody read him a good old storybook, the Chronicles of the Kingdom, which was probably just trying to help him count sheep and be bored and go to sleep. But as he was listening, he discovered that Mordecai saved his life by foiling a plot of some other guys who wanted to poison him or something. I don't know what they were trying to do. Anyway, so he's like, what did we do to reward and honor this man who has saved my life? Let me be generous and give him my honor and praise. And so Haman's walking by in the palace looking for the king. The king's like, I need a counselor. I need some advisor to help me figure out what should I do for this man who I've forgotten to honor in the past. And so while Haman's walking in wanting to kill Mordecai, the king is wanting to honor Mordecai. And then he gives Haman the task of honoring Mordecai in public, out in the streets. And Haman's probably spewing and hating every single second of it.
Yeah.
So then we come to the second feast, and at the second feast, Esther finally reveals what she wants to request, and she says, this Haman is the one who's trying to kill me and all of my people. The king gets mad, and then he hangs Haman on the gallows that he'd even set up for Mordecai. And it's just a beautiful moment of justice is finally served, and it comes back on his own head. Now, let's jump in to chapter 8, because remember, we've already got a date set for the genocide of the Jews throughout the Persian Empire across 127 different satrapies or government systems across Asia, all the way through the Middle East and down to North Africa. The Persian Empire covers a large, large area, and the Jewish people have been dispersed amongst these places. And so we still need to find a way to put an end to this genocide, and that's where we're up to in the story. So please, can you read for us the first couple of verses, please?
Yes. On that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her.
Okay. All right, so let's just pause here. So When Esther was taken into the king's court as part of his harem, Mordecai gave her an instruction, don't reveal who you are. Don't reveal that you're a Jewish person. But now everything's come out into the open, and even more so, now the king has to be like, okay, help me understand what's going on. Help me put all the puzzle pieces together. And so they reveal, not only is Mordecai a cool guy that saved your life, but the reason why I know him is because he's my uncle. So then the king's like, oh, like, he's related to you, my favorite wife? Absolutely. Like I'm going to honor you even more. I'm going to honor Mordecai even more.
Yeah, and Mordecai had already saved the king's life.
Once prior to this,
so he had respect and appreciation for Mordecai.
Yeah. Okay, so It's interesting that the Queen Esther inherits the house of Haman, her mortal enemy, the mortal enemy of all of her people. So as Haman is put to death, then somebody's got to get all of his stuff. And in that society, if your family member is bringing shame on the family, the whole family gets shame and loses their position in society. So even though Haman had 10 sons, none of them were going to inherit his stuff just because, you know, dad was executed, like, we can get away scot-free. No, that's not how it worked. Like, the whole family is put down in society because of one person's sin or error or mistakes. And so, yeah, that's just the way the world worked at that time and in that place. And it works like that in other parts of the world here today. So all of his stuff, all of his property was given to Esther as her personal property, and Mordecai came before the king and they revealed how they were related. So let's go in verse 2.
So I think just think that Sure. Haman was second in the kingdom.
Yes.
So he must have had a pretty decent kind of property.
He was very, very wealthy. House. He was bribing the king so that he could have genocide upon the Jews.
Yeah.
He paid a certain large sum of money, which was probably about a year's revenue for the king to put into the treasury.
Yeah, and Mordecai would have come from nothing or very little.
Oh, yeah.
To inheriting or being given Haman's property, his house.
Mm.
All right, verse 2. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai, and Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman.
There you go. What a reversal in just the state in life for each of these people, right?
Yeah.
Haman's trying to kill Mordecai. Haman ends up on his own gallows, and then Mordecai receives all of the wealth of Haman, but also the position of authority within the kingdom as Haman, and is fully backed up by his cousin that he's raised, Esther, who is now the queen, as well as the king. Like, just, like, rocketed to a place of power overnight.
Yeah. And the idea of the signet ring, the king's signet ring, was the signature to the checkbook and the laws. And
this is very much like Joseph in Egypt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Joseph was in prison for probably approximately 3 years. Before that, he was a slave for about 10 years. He's now around the age of 30. And while he's in prison, all of a sudden, overnight, he rockets to being the prime minister of Egypt, which was the world power of the time. So this is very, very parallel to that story.
Yeah. Interesting, the house was given to Esther, but Esther just appoints Mordecai over the house of Haman. Yeah.
So it's kind of theirs jointly, in a sense. It's hers officially, but he gets to have it.
Yeah.
He gets to live there and enjoy every part of it. All right, let's keep reading, shall we?
Yeah. Now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears and counteract the evil of Haman the Agite and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king.
Okay, so this is the second time he's holding out the scepter to her.
The second time she's interceded for her people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this time she's using tears. She's not saying, please come to a banquet and hang out for a bit, for a couple of days. Instead, this time, like, her emotions, like, it's been a really taxing time. Remember, she was fasting for 3 days, completely, like, no food, no water. And now she's had 2 days in a row where she's been fully well-dressed and eating and drinking at these banquets that she's put on. She probably wasn't drinking a whole bunch because I think she would have wanted to keep her mind clear. But now it's like 5 days into this and there's been a lot of – it's been really tense for her, right?
Yeah.
And even Haman fell over her as he was begging for his life, and then he was taken away and – you know, hanged on the gallows. So she's had a really tense time, and now the emotions are probably getting to her finally. Like, she's been very composed up until this point.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
Well, it's now time for a quiz answer and a new quiz question. Please, producer Jack.
So the island that Paul left Titus was in Crete.
Yeah.
Yes, which you both had correct. Now, question number two. Mm-hmm. This is a Bible or not question.
Ooh.
Are you ready?
So why or no, or T or F?
Yes. Yeah. Yes or yes. T, yes or no? Is that how you normally play it?
Sometimes.
Is
Bible
this
or not?
Phrase
T or N.
Okay. So is this phrase, however you want to word it, is this phrase in the Bible or not? A little bird told me. Is this phrase in the Bible?
What?
Apparently it
Is opposite to what I
is
put.
Opposite to what you've both put in. So there you go, surprise.
Go.
See if our listeners know whether A Little Bird Told Me is in the Bible or not. So text us on 0491 064 669. Yes or no, is the phrase A Little Bird Told Me in the Bible or not?
Interesting. Okay. All right, let's jump back into our More Like Him segment. We are traveling through the Book of Esther in chapter 8 currently, and I think we just finished off at the end of verse 4. So verse 5, please.
Verse 5. So Esther said, "If it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his sight, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedath the Agite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who are in all the king's provinces."
Okay. So she's crying. She's bowing down before the king. He's held out his scepter to her, and she says, once again, for the umpteenth time, she's always approaching with softness and femininity to the king. She says, if it pleases the king, she's not bossing him around, if I have found favor in his sight. This is like, I don't know, like the fifth or sixth time at least in the Book of Esther where it talks about her finding favor. And she says, and if the thing seems right to the king and if I am pleasing in his eyes. She's got like four different qualifiers in this question. Let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who are in the king's provinces. Now, remembering this is in the kingdom of the empire of Persia, and there is a specific rule in Persia that says that whenever you write a law, it cannot be revoked. It is law for good. So, do you think one woman with all of her, you know, feminine charms is going to be able to overrule the way that the kingdom does things and has for hundreds of years?
Yes.
Is that how it's going
to
work?
It would have been difficult for the king to do this.
Yeah.
Because even
look, we know women in the ancient world are pretty influential. Like there's that one woman from Troy whose look sunk 1,000 ships. So is that what's going to happen here?
Yes, it is.
Is it? I don't know. Let's keep reading, shall we? She says in verse 6, "For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen?" Can you continue for us in verse 7?
Verse 7. "Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, 'Indeed, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he tried to lay hands on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree concerning the Jews as you please in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring. For whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke.'"
Okay. All right. That last line, "whatever is written and sealed with the king's signet cannot be revoked." So he's saying there's no way to take back what has already been written. However, I am going to give you the creative license to come up with whatever it is that you can come up with in order to help out, if not overturn this.
It was like a counter law, wasn't it?
Yes.
To counter what had already been done.
Yeah. So he's saying, look, I'm going to let you guys figure it out and do whatever you want to do, but you know, it cannot be undone. It needs to be creative and done in a roundabout way. Okay, let's keep going.
Verse 9. "So the king's scribes were called at the time, and in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day, and it was written, according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps and the governors and the princes of the provinces, from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all, to every province in its own script, to every people in their own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language."
Keep reading.
And he wrote in the name of the king, Ahasuerus, sealed it with the king's signet ring, and sent letters by couriers on horseback, riding on royal horses bred from swift seeds.
Steeds. Yeah, so from this point, so they've written up something, and now they need to get it out to everyone far and wide, from India to Ethiopia, starting from Iran, or is it Iraq? I think it's Iran.
Iran
in the Middle East. That's where Persia is based historically. So for them to get the message out, they're not going to take the slowest donkey possible. They're not going to walk or crawl or, you know, take a slow barge. They're taking the fastest race cars / race horses they possibly can in the entire kingdom, in the known world at the time. They have bred these horses for quickness, and they would have been able to get this message out the quickest possible.
Yeah.
So that everyone around the entire empire had the most opportunity to take action upon this, and that nobody would be left behind. Nobody would be able to slip through the cracks. This was of highest importance that this message go out. So let's find out what the message was.
Yes. Verse 11. So these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, kill, annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, to plunder their possessions. On the day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar.
Okay, let's just pause there. All right, so the first decree was that on the 13th of Adar, that's a month of the year in their calendar. On the 13th of Adar, they would be allowed, like the people who didn't like the Jews were allowed to kill any Jew person. But now there's this counter law saying that every Jewish person is allowed to fight back and also kill, annihilate, and take possession of the things belonging to any of the people who would try to assault them. So it wasn't that the people of the empire were being forced to attack the Jews, but they were being given permission on that day, if they wanted to attack the Jews. So not every person would have wanted to participate in that. But now this counter law is saying, hey, now that you're able to identify that there's people who really don't like you enough to kill you, then you're allowed to fight back, and you're allowed to defend yourself, and you're allowed to take what belongs to them, even if it's women and children who are doing this. So you know what this actually shows to me? It shows me that Haman was the instigator, but only the representative head of the anti-Semitism and of the Jewish people in the empire. Haman was not the only person who hated the Jews. This was something that was rife amongst the people of that empire. And now this was just going to bring everything to a head. Instead of there being really subtle attacks on the Jewish people that were not being addressed at the highest level, now it was being brought to the forefront, and they were encouraged to attack the Jews. But then also in this twist, this plot twist, they were now, the Jewish people were allowed to defend themselves, which meant that they could wipe out the people who hated them, who wanted to attack them. Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
It's bringing it up. It's kind of like a bad pimple. You know, have you ever had a blind pimple? And it's like just sitting there on your face, and it hurts to kind of touch it, but there's nothing coming out. It's not ready. It's not ripe to come out. This is such a gross description of what I'm thinking here, but I just feel like this is the moment where it's ready to erupt, and then you can get rid of it. You can clean it up, and it'll be gone. It can heal. Right? It's not just going to sit there painful anymore.
Yeah.
So let's keep reading, shall we?
All right. Verse 13. A copy of the document was to be issued as a decree in every province and published for all people, so that the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. The couriers who rode on royal horses went out, hastened and presented on,
pressed on
by the king's command, and the decree was issued in Shushan, the citadel.
Okay, keep reading, please.
So Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel in blue and white, with a great crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness, joy and honor. Mm. And in every province and city, wherever the king's command and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a holiday. Then many of the people of the land became Jews because fear of the Jews fell upon them.
Wow. Okay.
What a turnaround.
What a turnaround. Now, first of all, we see that Mordecai is dressed up gloriously and splendiously. I don't know if splendiously is not a word, but it is now. Okay. Splendorously? I don't know. There's a lot of splendor. But if we actually just go back to chapter 6 briefly into verse 8, it says that the king was telling Haman to put on a royal robe that the king has worn and a horse on which the king has ridden, which had a royal crest placed on its head. Let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes. He may array the man whom the king delights to honor. So we already have a moment where the king has told Haman to put all these beautiful things on Mordecai and parade him around the streets. Now, that was just a foreshadowing of what was to come.
Yeah.
The foreshadowing of now Mordecai going out in the presence in a royal apparel of blue and white, great crown of gold, and garment of fine linen and purple. All of these were of the finest, highest quality. This is like the king's own clothes. It's just beautiful to see the foreshadowing that is fulfilled at this end of chapter 8. The Jews had light and gladness, joy and honor. And in every province and city, wherever the king's command and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness. That's so cool.
Mm.
Like, they were mourning. They were terrified. Only a few days ago, they were fasting completely, no food or water, and now they get to experience joy and gladness. And the coolest part of this is, like, they made a feast and a holiday, but then many of the people of the land became Jews. So they became proselyte Jews, like they converted essentially because they were scared. This reminds me of when the Israelites were leaving Egypt. Remember, there was a mixed multitude that came out because the people of the land, after the 10 plagues had fallen upon them, they were so terrified of this God of the Jews that they were like, well, he must be an amazing God. We want to be on his side. We don't want to be stuck with these less powerful gods that are not able to protect the land. We want to be with the most powerful gods. So this is a display of God's power and his glory, and it attracts people to him. But imagine also, like, these people of the land who are becoming convert Jews, they don't want to be caught up in the killing that's going to take place down the track. They don't want to be caught up in being associated with people who might try to assault the Jews and then experience the counterattack. They will want to be identified as Jews now. They can see the tide has turned and they want to be on the winning side. And I just want to encourage you, listener, are you on the winning side when it comes to this great battle between good and evil? Are you on God's side? Because no matter how much Satan seems to be prevailing in the world right now, God ultimately will prevail, and he will put an end to sin and suffering and death and evil. And if you want to be living in perfect peace and joy and gladness for all of eternity with God, you can make that decision right now. You are welcome to invite God and invite Jesus into your heart right now and be on the winning side. You don't have to be stuck on Satan's side. You don't have to be trying to attack God's people because you will ultimately end up losing. But if you want, you can choose him right now. If you want to make that decision, please text us in to 0491 064 669. We'd love to connect with you if this is something that you're deciding for the first time today.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
In the rest of today's show, we're going to be talking about the world's best countries for education. Following that, we'll be talking about a flash flood that just took place overnight in the Himalayan mountains, and there are Aussies missing and people have died, so stay tuned for that. We'll also be talking to Pudan from Asian Aid, and we'll also be learning about love-driven ministry as we begin our study of 2 Corinthians 1 in our encounter with God. So make sure you stay tuned for that.
Do you guys want to know the answer?
Oh, of course I do.
Yes. So, Bible or not is its phrase a little bird told me in the Bible. It actually is not directly, but it is derived from a verse in Ecclesiastes 10:20, which says, "Even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature tell the matter."
Ooh, wow. Little birdie told
me. So I can see why you may think yes and why you may think no.
So there's no really right answer, yes or no?
Well, yes.
Incorrect.
Our quiz today is technically yes. Okay. It is derived from the Bible, yeah.
But how is the quiz worded again, one more time?
A little bird told me.
But it doesn't say a little bird told me.
No, that's right. Let's ponder this.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.